is nowhere.
All right, Mal, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 571. Jason Lindgren is with me and Randy Masters returns. You may remember we just had Randy on episode 562. It was wildly popular, and I think the reason for that is because the things that we are discussing with Randy are the things that really matter at some of the highest levels. When we begin to talk about frequency, vibration, color, sound, these are, how would I put it? Maybe this will become the dividing line on where we're about to be and where we have been. But if we go back far enough, it is my view that these things were very well known at a distant past that we know little to nothing about. And when we see these beautiful buildings and other things that we can't really wrap our heads around, it is knowledge of the things that we're about to talk about, from my point of view, that made those things possible. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a very beautiful good morning.
It is. It's actually not freezing here, so I have real hope for spring coming before too long, but let's jump in here. Welcome back, Randy.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, and I totally enjoyed our time in the last interview, and I'm very pleased that people responded positively to it.
You kind of light up the microphone. You have a glowing aura about you. The mood lightens instantly, I've noticed. But before we jump in here, why don't you offer out any web addresses or anything like that that you're interested in letting people know about, books, whatever?
Yes, okay. I'm building a new website. It's up, but it's not completed. It's Universal Song, S-O-N-G, universalsong.net, universalsong.net. And my email is universalsong@yahoo.com. And my current email, I've got several. Feel free to write me requests and things. I mean, I all the things that I'm doing are custom made to order, the tuning forks and all those type of things. So it takes a little bit of time. I don't have a big storeroom where I can just go get it and mail it the next morning. But anyway, just let me know. I love to hear from people. I do my best to get back. I get about 1,200 or more emails every day. So it's pretty interesting.
All right. I'm going to queue up where I'm going to start us in the area of different colors and how they relate to different aspects of healing. But I am beginning to notice, and even since the beginning of 2024, the huge uptick in healing modalities that have to do with frequency. For those who have followed along, you might be thinking in your mind right now about Clive's so-called Tesla or violet ray devices. This type of technology is on the upswing. I will say that it is very, very censored right now. So people in the world, if you bump into these things and you want to just jump online and let the whole world know about it, you might want to think twice. We're working on reestablishing these ideas, and there are plenty of people out there in this world that would love to stamp it out. But having said that, Randy, let's get into the different colors and how they relate to different aspects of healing.
Okay, well, what I started doing in the 70s is working with the Dinshaw Gaudioli material. He has a little book called Let There Be Light that you can get from the Dinshaw Health Society in Malaga, New Jersey. His son, Darius Dinshaw, runs it. And I started by getting slides and putting a slide projector in front of me and then sitting in front of it with the remote control and shining the different colors on my body. And what Dinshaw did, which is a little bit tricky if you go to see a practitioner on some level, he would figure out what was going on with people. And then he would tone their body with certain colors that were done through glass gels. And the gel colors were all from the mineral kingdom. So I went into the math of all of that stuff. And I can tell you the simple formula in this. So he would shine certain colors for a specific amount of time on a specific amount of body and different times of the day. Well, it's not easy for everybody to go to a practitioner and do that without going to a special like healing facility where you kind of check in and you're there for a few days. But anyway, he did that. And he got a lot of static in court things, you know, hassling him and trying to shut down sending his light machines across state lines and things like that. And they were originally done with glass gels. Like I say, his choice of colors all came out of the spectrum in the mineral kingdom, which I think is like fantastic. Then that got compromised because the company did not make the glass lenses consistently. So he switched over to theater gels, a thin plastic that you put in front of lights for lighting for the theater. And that's what made by the Roscoline company. And those are still available today. And things work there. But originally, it was the quality of the light generated from a spectrum that came from the mineral kingdom. And that is a real big key in all of this. So I started working with that. And then I started making tuning forks to all of these, which I have the formulas. I can tell you how I broke his code, and by the way.
So wait a minute here. I want to be very, we better just queue up so people can follow. Look up Dinshaw Gaudioli.
G-H-A-D-I-A-L-I, Gaudioli. D-I-N-S-H-A-H. And he was actually a head of a police department in New York.
All right. So what I want to lay down for folks is he was shining light through basically a piece of glass that was colored. So the colored light was the healing modality.
That's right. He didn't use sound.
No, but that's why what you just said is a big deal, because I just heard you say that you translated the frequency value from color to sound.
Right. And he had too done that, but he was not using that in his healing clinics. It was all done with light. And my theory is that when you put the light and the sound together, and not just a note that, let's say, is a blue note or and a blue, some blue color, but eventually when you tune them even more precisely when appropriate, you have a sound frequency that is the of converting the wavelength of light in that color versus just general. And so like a name of a note, that's not enough. And so I've been doing it very specifically. I did that with hydrogen wavelengths and many things where I've converted them into sound. So there's a one-to-one type of correspondence in there. And I believe that something else can happen when the sound and the light are mathematically right on and really perfected.
How much of a bump do you think? I mean, is it like a 50% increase? And I want to use the word power. I think you know where I'm getting at. But do you feel like it's a significant boost to add the audio into the light?
Yes, I do. And when you think about that whole statement, you know, in the beginning, let there be light, that came out of sound on one level. You know, in other words, well, actually, it came out of thought first. But they usually don't get into that. Most people don't get into that part of the thought, because all of this can be done with thought, by being able to focus thought without having any colors and without having any sound and just thinking things. And in the body, the body will respond to sounds that you're thinking about without making the sound out loud. Let's say you're not humming or doing anything like that, but just thinking about it creates a sonic impact that affects the organs and the systems in the body. So if you put that clarity of intention and visuals with the sound and with actual sound and with the light, that is super powerful. And I believe that's what we're talking about as far as the best impact that could be delivered to someone, including the receiver thinking things and not just being passive. In other words, I have people, when I've worked on them with tuning forks and things, visualizing, and I give people some pretty interesting visualizations. And then that ties in with the neurotransmitters and neuropeptides and things in the brain to achieve a whole lot more than just being passive. But I'm not downgrading being passive. You know, people could fall asleep and have effects happen, and they're not really participating consciously. But when you participate consciously, then we're getting back into that heart of creation. So, you know, when you hear that in the beginning was the word, okay, I don't think that's where it starts. In the beginning was the thought for me. Then there's a word. Now, it might happen super fast, but nevertheless, it's coming from a higher matrix of thought, as people call it. And then it sounded. And then let there be light. So the light is appearing out of the sound, which appears out of the thought that preceded it. That's how I wire it up. What do you think about that?
What you're talking about to me is going to be one of the biggest leaps forward in actual healing. I mean, like curing someone. In my mind, I'm not aware of a more powerful way to go at healing, but I wanted to ask you a couple questions Like if you had, say you had a vibrator, you know, you've already figured out the value of the frequency for the color coming through Dinshaw's light method. And for everyone listening, it's like concerts. You know how in concerts where they put the lights on and they put a plastic gel to change the color? It's the exact same thing.
That's what they're using, theater gels. That's exactly it.
Right, right. So what you did is you took that further and translated it over to a tuning fork. Could you, if you had an adjustable vibrator, like, you know, a muscle vibrator, could you translate to the correct frequency into that vibrator using what you know now?
Yeah, especially if you could calibrate it to so many hertz or fraction of a hertz, that type of thing. I wanted to have this dialed in a computer and then have crystals coming out of the computer and the sound run through quartz crystals as another type of a tuning fork. And then, because I have used quartz crystals and put colored lights through the quartz crystals, which is what color puncture that Peter Mandel does. He's got little color wands, little glass gels that go on the end of like a light, little mag light thing. Then they put those on acupuncture points on the body and other points besides acupuncture points. Acupuncture has not mapped the whole human body, but it's done a lot. And putting it on those points, and it's very, very powerful. That's spot specific versus a whole area like the abdomen or the chest or the lungs. To do the lung point or to do the kidney point on the bottom of the feet, K1, the kidney point, opens up the healing channels. Generally, if people have some challenges with hearing and you clear up things within the kidney channel, you're also helping clear up things with the listening. So I would start almost all the healing sessions with making sure that those kidney channels are open and flowing for people to have a better connection with sound and hearing as well. So all of that could be calibrated. And I've worked on things like that. Then, of course, you have to deal with how the RGB and other things in the computer work in order to get a specific wavelengths. And that would have to be worked with in such a way that you would have a good resolution. But when you can send it through quartz crystals, the quartz amplifies. And then when you put the sound through the quartz crystals, the electrons in the quartz crystal then tune to the sound that you're putting through. I tune a lot of different quartz crystals with tuning forks. And then when you squeeze them a little bit and percuss it, you get the piezoelectric effect, but you're actually getting tuned electron flow in that quartz crystal. And it's very, very powerful. I believe the Egyptians were using that type of thing and why they used a lot of granite in the buildings because of the quartz content for sound purposes.
Do you have an idea of what blue, like can you define blue in your work free of computers, just in the world? Is there a definition for what actually, just as a random grab, pure blue is?
Well, I know the color spectrum that they've measured for blue light, but you know, it gets complex. I mean, there's some very interesting things with blue light, and I'm glad you said that. And I can read something from a book called A World Within a World. And these were some prisoners in Siberia that were living in terrible conditions. And this was transmitted like telepathically, so they don't really give an author. But anyway, this Christ being, let's call him, Yeshua, came to these prisoners who were in terrible conditions and worked with them and trained them with light so they could be down in a cave underground, hold their hand out and create a flower right there, a physical flower. He taught them how to manifest with light. And the key, one of the keys was blue light, which you see often around the auras of different kinds of saints and holy people. And I get back to that blue, because when you look in the powerful microscopes around the cells, you see that plasma blue with a little bit of white in it, kind of a washed out cobalt blue is what it looks like. And I've been asking certain biologists and physicists to give me the color of that. I want to know exactly what wavelengths or combination of wavelengths or wavelengths that blue is, because I've been working with that blue since the 70s. And I train people. I don't know if we mentioned this last time. Did I give the breathing technique for activating that blue light last time?
Jeez, it feels to me. Do you remember that, Jason?
It sounds familiar.
It does sound familiar, but why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, it's real simple. Okay. Now, I'm doing this out of experience because I worked with a master who was a mentor and friend since the 70s and working with this light. And basically, they're finding that if you don't have enough of the mitochondria on board, a lot of healing doesn't take place. And as you know, today there are things targeting humans' mitochondria that's causing problems, and people aren't healing the way they should because they don't have enough of that mitochondria. And also, I want to know what some of the, I know the frequency of that of 25 hertz G sharp is the fundamental of mitochondria from a scientist that works with that. And that's the fundamental frequency in the cat purring that the Russians study. 25 hertz, 50, 100, and 200 were the main fundamentals when they studied cats that fell off of a building way high and then purred and then were up and around, running around. They go, how do they do this? So they started studying the frequencies. Well, now that G sharp is in the red life force area moving in with a little bit of healing red orange in with it. So that was not a blue color at that point on that level of it. But anyway, if you do a certain breathing technique and you visualize starting at your feet, like these electric blue white dots, like little pilot lights lighting up all the cells in your body. And when you do this, you'll look like you're beaming up to somebody if they can see it, like you're beaming up on Star Trek. But the color is this electric blue-white color, this plasma color. That's that plasma color that you see in a lot of studies of plasma. So I believe that's what we're talking about. And that comes down to the blue rather than the life force from red and red-orange. It's the blue that's doing this. So when, as you're visualizing this coming up through your body, you imagine and you breathe in through your nose to the count of five, and then you exhale to the count of 30. So it's a 6-to-1 ratio, into five, out to 30, out through your mouth, and you purse your lips like you're going to whistle or something to create a resistance. And that resistance helps build up this energy in the body. And you don't pause your breath. You breathe in, and it's connected breathing, and you breathe out. Well, I learned to do this back in the 70s. And by the way, there are people who could not get pregnant. And when you could get this kind of energy going in their body, they had no problem because they did not have enough of the life force activated to carry a child to term safely and healthfully. And this breathing can turn that switch on. And it has with all the people I've been around with in that regard. And I did have an experience where I turned into this light and working with this healer, you know, and I merged with it and I went to a place where I had access to all information. All I had to do was think about something and instantly that information came to me. So, and it had to do with this blue, and you get these expressions like out of the blue or the songs like Beyond the Blue Horizon, not Blue Moon. That's a whole other thing, but Beyond the Blue Horizon, that phrase is pretty fascinating when you really get into it. So you do this breathing. And then you, if you want to, like I've done this with like a bird that'll fly into a plate glass window, and I'd work on the bird, and I'd use a tripod position of my thumb, my forefinger, and my middle finger touching together. And then I would touch the creature or a human or whatever. Now, if I couldn't touch them, like let's say you went into a hospital and you're working with a burn patient and you couldn't touch them, like maybe anywhere because of the nature of the burns or whatever, I can still transmit this through the air and see it. And if the person can participate, seeing these pilot lights lighting up in their body. And it's amazing the things that can change. You can even heal a broken bone on the spot. If you get to it right away, you can change the momentum so it doesn't carry through and then you have to wait for a certain amount of time for that bone to heal. You can reset it with this boost of that mitochondria and that blue light. And so when this being... So you see that now when I do this, I can hold the tuning fork and be doing this breathing and sending that light through the tuning fork, and it carries that light. That's another thing. And I don't have to use tuning forks that are tuned to a blue sound frequency, let's say. It could be anything as a carrier, which is, I feel that's another good thing about the sound is how it carries things into the body and the intention, which you get with chanting and using certain sounds that Tibetans and other people use to carry their intention with the sound, mantras, all of that type of thing. So I've been doing that since the 70s and all kinds of things. I've had a hummingbird fly into a window and totally healed them up, and they flew away, circled around me when I let them go, like thanking me. They know what's going on, and this animals respond very quickly to this. So that's the native, it's called regenesis, this type of healing, using this breathing and using your fingers in this tripod type position. So you're acting like jumper cables in the battery and somebody's worn down and you put the jumper cables on and crank it up in the truck. So I'm being the truck in the battery and doing this breathing and sending this type of force or vibration into the person. It's very, very powerful.
Well, I wanted to ask you, so is there a definition, like right now, if I asked you what, from a natural perspective, free of any digital or, you know, man-made things, what is the value of pure blue? Would you use, like, is there, I'm assuming that nature would have to set the definition. And by the way, I've mentioned before, like in Japan, they used to do things like the color I'm talking about is a freshly blown peach blossom. They would use that natural anchor point to determine what they were talking about. In this case, I mean, is it hydrogen? I mean, is there something in nature that you would reference to put a definition on what pure blue is?
Well, I think there's a whole spectrum of wavelengths in the blue spectrum from light blue on up. I don't think there is just one that represents the only essence. I mean, in this one particular book that I was mentioning, this being Yeshua, they didn't give him that name, but anyway, talks about this quality of blue. And it's kind of interesting how he talks about it. And I'll just read a little bit here. He calls it the sustaining quality with what we call the color blue, which is in reality a composite of radiation. Now, I don't mean nuclear radiation, it radiates. When you hear me say the word radiation, manifesting in an exact degree to form that which we have described as the sustaining quality. And that's the key of by starting with blue.
What is the sustaining quality? I don't quite get that.
It's the color blue itself, different wavelengths of that color blue. It's like the sustaining quality of our universe.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah. And, you know, having talked with, you know, a certain person who has been traveling with ETs for maybe 40, 50 years, they say that our universe is called the blue universe. And there's other ones that are a different color. But being the blue, not just the planet here and our solar system, it's a blue universe. So that blue is a color that these Christ beings carry with them. It's a sustaining type of a color. Healing, major fundamental of our reality is out of this blue. No wonder it's a favorite color for lots of people. You know, that's very important.
Yeah, it's my favorite color, you know?
Yeah, and just what is it? Well, I've been trying to pin it down, and I have lots of wavelengths, including ones that come out of the hydrogen spectrum and that type of thing. There's a cyan blue of 486 nanometers that comes out of hydrogen. And when you put sunlight through a quartz prism, one of the nine color wavelengths that it breaks down into is a 486 nanometer cyan blue. Now that has the more of the turquoise type of a blue rather than a darker or other types of blue.
That's where I would think you would pin. Like if you wanted to say, as a benchmark, this is pure blue, and I get that there's no way to actually pin down this is the basis for all blue, but in a rainbow, you know, because our world is of that light quality. But by the way, what's your favorite color, Randy?
Oh, when I was born, it was pink was my favorite color. I still have a lot of, you know, I really feel deep with things from pink for some reason, and also lavender. But I also like turquoise, and that fits in. And I also like the healing colors from saffron because of the life force that's in saffron. That's why a lot of the different monks wear robes that are dyed with saffron, because it vibrates with the DNA. The resonance of the DNA vibrates with saffron.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about this statement? I used to use the example to illustrate how discombobulated our culture has tried to shape us by the simple idea of the, you know, how people do the gender test thing when they're going to have a baby, and yeah, if they pop the balloon and it's blue, it's going to be a boy. And if they pop it and pink, it's going to be a girl. And I said, that's backwards, because red is masculine and pink is a spiritualized red, because it took white to get the red to pink. So it's literally backwards. Do you agree with what I'm saying there?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But there's a lot of different uses and wavelengths of red that have a certain spiritual in it, but the pink is what spiritualizes it. That's why you get certain things like tourmalines, like pink tourmaline and rubellite tourmaline that actually has magenta in it. And so that magenta color is also one of my favorites, which you get by blending red on one side of the rainbow with violet on the other side. And I demonstrate that with laser pointers and show that it creates magenta. And when people are working with cancer, one of the main colors that they use for toning on the body is magenta. And look at that in nature. One side of a leaf is magenta, the other side might be green. And those are called reverse polarity. They're not complementary colors and they're not opposite colors. There are only two colors there that represent this reverse polarity. And I find that really interesting. Morganite, the gemstone, when it's a pink color, has a lot of that frequency in it. And that's supposed to be the highest level of love of any of the gemstones on Earth is morganite, which comes in pink and clear and peach. But anyway, that and rubellite tourmaline with those colors in it balances the female energies. And it's also good for counteracting extra electromagnetic interferences, wearing, like, let's say, beads of rubellite tourmaline. And rubellite is actually magenta. And the lighter it gets, the more it works for younger people who are very young, the light pinks and such. But that pink, that area, I find very interesting, different than the blue. And blue you get from purity, and blue sapphire is the main color that carries the blue ray, they call it. There's different gemstones that cover and carry certain rays, not just the color, but the ray of creation, like red for ruby, red ruby, orange is carnelian, and yellow is yellow sapphire. And then green, we have green emerald, and then blue, we get blue sapphire. And then when we get into the indigo, it's gem sodalite, which is a translucent form of sodalite. And then violet that you get from amethyst. And then the white spectrum comes from white beryl, which is clear beryl. And that gives you eight different rays there in creation. So I look at those colors in sapphire also for that radiance in blue. Now, it's very interesting in blue that when Stuart Swerdlow balances chakras, what he uses for the throat chakra is actually ice blue. Well, that gets very interesting. I mean, I have some gemstones and minerals in an ice blue. What makes that ice blue? You know, the clear and whatever you blend with it, that's a specific shade.
Spiritualized shade, because that would have to be white to go to that color value.
Exactly. In order to make that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then uses a blue, a royal blue for the third eye, which I think lapis also in the Tibetan traditions, there's a lot of meditations using lapis blue. And that's very interesting. So each one of these has distinct qualities to it, which is what these prisoners in Russia were trained in. He said here, the eye of man has never beheld the true blue, which represents his sustaining force. True, he has seen and responded to many variations, which he calls blue, from the radiant blue of the summer sky to the blue, which he refers to as a condition of the mind. That's more of a, you know, when you're feeling blue. He gives recognition, therefore, to the quality of uplift and that of depression in different aspects of the same color, saying the word blue. But we'll forget the emotional part of that for now. And so he's talking about this blue having a certain radiation to it, but not being able to pin it down and say it's like a certain flower or a certain gemstone, which would make it a lot easier. It goes on with different things. And there's a lot of uses of blue within healing. For instance, within Dinshaw's work for blue, it relieves itching. It's a diaphoretic, increases perspiration. It's a febrifuge, it reduces fever, and it's a vitality builder. And I think that's one of the clues here, building vitality. Well, if you fire up the mitochondria in the body and you're doing it with this blue light, that is definitely firing up the vitality in the body, incredibly so. With animals, plants, butterflies, all the creatures respond to that. So does that help?
Yeah, well, you know, when I read Dinshaw's book, and Jason and I did an episode on Dinshaw, what blew me away was not just the clinical results. That'll gobsmack you, the successes he had, and that's why they came down on him.
That's right.
just so everybody knows, there are still apparently a lot of his light machines around. But to be fair, they wouldn't be that difficult to make as far as medical devices go. But my point here is some of his treatments were not even that long. Like he would do 10 minutes, one color, you know, 10, 15 minutes, another color. And he was getting these results. But let me frame up why that blows me away. Consider going to a rock concert in a stadium.
Mm-hmm.
His medical device is in spotlights. It's hung all over the stage. It's pointed at the audience. It's pointed at the band. All those color gels are the actual healing modality that Dinshaw proved worked, but now they're being used for entertainment. Now add on top of it the vibration from whatever music is being played. And now you can realize the power of what can happen in a situation like that. It wasn't too long ago. Jason probably saw this. There was some, I don't know whether it was a rap concert or it was younger people in the modern era, but a wave of energy knocked down the whole front area of the concert. And when you begin to realize what we've been overlooking all these decades and years is the power of what's actually going on in simply the lighting alone. And I know that's a mouthful, but that's what I start thinking about.
Well, I'd work out in my concerts, you know, what keys the pieces were in, either single keys or moving to different keys, and would want the colors to go with the key that we're playing in, the main key, even though it would go through different chords, it would have different colors, the main nature of the key, major or minor, whatever that is, and color code the music.
Truly immersive. That's truly immersive. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's powerful. And sometimes you have to balance something. You might have a little too much of a certain color and you need to balance it and know how to balance the colors. Well, that takes a special training and not all lighting people can do that. They may work intuitively or they may have color designers for the concert and what colors they're using. But I haven't talked to any of them that I recall that knew the healing quality of every color that they were using with their gels and what could happen and how that could be synced up. I mean, look at, you know, some of these Taylor Swift doing a concert for 96,000 people. That's huge.
It is huge.
Yeah. I mean, there's a phenomenon going on there that has to be done responsibly. That's another part of it.
Except that it's not.
Yeah.
Well, the point is there's the energy in play there is it's a lot.
Yeah. And how it affects the musicians. Now, somebody may need more blue. So when you are performing music and you have these blue lights on you, maybe you're enhancing the performance or maybe not because that's too much blue for somebody. And if they don't know that, they could be thrown off by the theater lighting in the concert by bathing in an intensity of a certain color that is not what their body is needing at that time. It's a huge realm, but that's what I see the potential in concerts is having the lighting be very consciously applied.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what you're actually, just to try to frame the power of what you're talking about, before we started recording, we were talking about the man who went into the big pyramid, into the chamber where the sarcophagus is there, kind of broken, but he put a resonating device into the chamber and he put a membrane across the top of the sarcophagus. And when he vibrated it, some of the cymatic patterns that were created on the membrane he had stretched matched nearly verbatim, some of the hieroglyphic symbols. And basically, to put that in perspective, there are claims that back in a time we know nothing about, that when language was created, it was the vibratory rate of the word was supposed to relate to or match what you were talking about. In other words, today I say that's a table. There's no connection between anything that came out of my mouth and the actual object other than the meaning we've assigned it. The claim is back in the day that when you said table, the actual power, frequency, and resonance of the word you were using resonated with the object itself. And I think that's what was demonstrated in the sarcophagus test. But to me, that's an extension of what you said you did. You got the lighting frequency to match the audio frequency to make it immersive. In other words, everything relates to everything appropriately.
Yeah, and with the right visualizations and saying the word, then you're back to like pronouncing the Om and creating a Sri Yantra, because it links up, especially with also with the Hebrew language, because it's a light, it's a stellar light language of creation. It's one of them. I'm not pushing culture. I'm not pushing and saying that or anything would deal with religion. It's simply that language, the relationship between the words, the phonetics, the vowel sounds. And that's where all the magic is in the Hebrew language, is in the vowel sounds and the overtones and undertones of those vowels. And if you know how to manipulate that, you can manifest things just by saying it. You want a table? You could manifest a table along and guided by your visualization for what kind of table and so on. But I think that's part of the early manifestation of the word, they call it. And you know, certainly talk about dolphins being able to do things with sound. It's a different language, but it's a language of vibration specific enough to create certain effects in the world. And a lot of the gurus have demonstrated that. They manifest things right there using the right sounds for that. And modern day, you know, it's a little random. It's probably good that everything doesn't manifest the way people talk and think, because their thoughts are random and influenced by a lot of influences that could color the resulting reality that they'd be creating. But if you could get real clear on all that, I would think it would get right down to specific harmonics in the vowel sounds. And that's where that, I believe that that's coming from. And also, I have the Egyptian Sonics book that John Stuart Reed wrote. I saw the pictures of the sarcophagus with that material stretch over it, and that's very powerful. But also, I've been looking at the frequency of that sarcophagus. Now, we don't often know what did they do with that sarcophagus. And you can read, of course, a lot of researchers now talking about the different things in the pyramids and how they were used and what they were actually doing. But most people said it's 438.6 hertz. And when Paul Horn went in there and did his recording in the pyramid where he played his flute, a fellow I know told him, when you go in there, take your fist and tap on the sarcophagus and it'll give a 438.6 hertz and tune your flute to that rather than 432 or 440 or something. Okay, then I began to look at, well, how did they get that frequency? Is that the whole frequency, 438.6, or is there more to it? And I have about three or four formulas for it. One of them, 2/3 pi squared times 100 gives you 438.649, etc. That's one formula, 2/3 pi, and then you square that. Then another one is 5 to the 4th power times 64, which just octavizes it, and you get 438.6625. Then I did one with gematria, and here we are dealing with the word. And I think in gematria, you have very specific words that have very specific tonal aspects to them and vibrations. That's part of how gematria works. And the number 1563 means God eternal. You divide that by 4 and then multiply it by an equal tempered half step, the 12th root of 2, 1.059, and you'll get 438.602004. It's another 438.6 right there. That's another way of doing that right out of language. Where the others was one out of math using pi, and the pyramids are just full of pi values all over the place. Various measurements that are multiples of pi or pi squared or any of that type of thing, or phi. So I wanted to find pi and phi values that could create that frequency of that sarcophagus, because that's not a random event. And then, of course, we get into the frequency of the room itself.
Which healed his back, by the way. Sorry to interrupt, but apparently when he did that, he'd injured his back, didn't know if he could even do it, and then realized after he'd done everything that apparently his back had been fixed.
Yeah. And you're playing frequencies into a resonant room with all kinds of different granite and whatnot, with quartz in the granite amplifying sound and using sound for very profound things, including weapons. If you read some of the current books that are coming out, Giza Power Plant and those different books that are coming out talking about how the pyramid was used as a weapon, it gets pretty interesting. Now, that weapon could be a weapon of love and healing, or it could be a weapon as a beam weapon that literally destroys things. And I believe they had both of those things going on in the pyramid, so people could have profound healing. Now, when I laid in the pyramid on one of my trips I led in Egypt, was laying in the pyramid, just Tony making sounds. And all of a sudden, all the power in the pyramid went out early in the morning before the sun came up. The Egyptian authorities didn't know what happened. And then the ceiling was coated with blue light that showed up, sparkly blue light all over the ceiling. I didn't intend that to happen. I just knew that I wanted to sound in that acoustic container of the sarcophagus and make sounds. And I happened to hit something and those effects happened. But that blue light is exactly the blue light that I saw in our cells and I saw in my own experiences of light experiences, that blue. Now, what wavelength exactly that blue was, I don't know, or if it was a combination, but it's very much like a cobalt blue type of light and also very much like the blue in LED lights. So there's something going on with that.
What did you actually summon up when you did that?
Well, I just was vibrating and then the room would vibrate in some way a little bit. I hit, I think, a resonant point with what I was toning and sounding that had the effect on the whole room. And the electricity went out for a while. And then that light appeared on the ceiling. So I think I accessed a light effect from sound. The sounds I made actually contributed toward turning on that light in some way. I don't know what the frequency was because I didn't have something to measure what I was toning. I was just doing it intuitively. I had tuning forks with me, but I was not using them. I was just using my voice. So my senses, a couple of things, plus I could have codes in my voice from whatever I've done in life, this life and other lives, that have put certain codes. So when I say things, it's in my voice. The code is in my voice.
Has anyone ever used a tone generator in there and then just swept through frequencies to see what does what?
I imagine they have because they brought tone measuring devices and measured the acoustics and they found one of them, including John Stuart Reed's measurement, 121 hertz for the room and 117 for the acoustic space of the sarcophagus, not ringing it like a bell. That's where we got that 438.6, but the acoustic space inside the sarcophagus. Well, that's a difference of 4 hertz there, which would be in, you know, a certain brain waves. That could be one advantage. Also, it's been measured at 125 hertz for the room, which when you octavize that down, you get 7.8125, which could be the pyramid defining that low Schumann resonance instead of 7.83, et cetera, but 7.8125. And then I've got the mathematics of 117.1875 exactly for the sarcophagus. And the ratio between the two is 16 divided by 15, which is the ratio of the base of the Giza pyramid, the main one, and the second pyramid is a ratio of 16 to 15. So that's not something to just overlook, to have a specific ratio like that. I've got other targets, and I don't know if something changes so that the temperature in the room or lining up with star effects, let's say, that are affecting the materials in there could shift what that frequency is in that room. I'm not sure. But something had to go off when I was toning it to create blue light forming on the ceiling. And I know sound was the effect because my friend Peggy Black was in there in several rooms with the Egyptian officials and she was toning. And all of a sudden you look up at a granite ceiling and the ceiling like opens up and you can see the stars. I don't mean like it's on hinges, but it just disappeared and opened up and everybody saw it. They saw the star field above Egypt coming through the ceiling with the ceiling intact. It's like it became invisible. And she did that all with sound. Toning, the right tone, that's pretty interesting. And I think that should be measured. If I went there again, I'd like to have the measuring equipment to see what it is that I was doing.
I'm sorry, like you're seeing through something or something's being projected?
Yeah, it's like in a solid granite type ceiling in the King's Chamber. All of a sudden, you could see right through it. You wouldn't see the rooms above it. You'd see right through it up to the stars. It opened up. It opened up a space, I think, between matter, and it shape-shifted. That sounds a little far out, but I believe that that's part of it. That may be one of the ways that they move the blocks using sound.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, they've stopped denying what was proven in Tibet and even filmed. You know, a man went there and filmed them moving a massive stone up something like a 250-foot cliff.
Right.
The film was lifted, but the measurements and everything are out on the internet now. Even the amount of monks it took and the instruments and the chanting.
Right. I've studied that. They set up a sonic field.
Yep.
Both with prayer and with the big horns that they use and the drums. A friend of mine did this up at Sea Ranch for that big Tibetan monastery that's built up there on the coast of northern coast of California. And they moved a giant boulder that linking trucks up with chains, they couldn't move it. And the head monk did not want them to blow up the stone. So they just levitated it. And he watched them with their horns. They gathered their drums and chanting, and it lifted right up and they moved it hundreds of feet.
Did they touch it to move it, or did they do it all with sound?
All with sound, from what I remember.
Mm.
And my friend was there. He was part of that because he wanted to hook up the trucks and chain the rock and then tow it. And then he wanted to blow it up, and they didn't want him to blow up this for whatever reason. Tarthang Tukul Rinpoche is the one who's in charge of that. It's called Odeon.
What was his name? He was a Tulku?
Yeah, Tarthang Tukul Rinpoche. And he's the other one besides the Dalai Lama. There's a whole lot of different sects in Tibet. And who's really in charge? I mean, it's that's something else beyond our discussion. Yeah,
the Dalai Lama is the Gelug, but the Rinpoche means precious one. The Tulku indicates that he was recognized not long after birth as being a reincarnated master.
Yeah, and they know where they buried things from their previous lifetime.
Right. They know all kinds. It's so well documented. I don't talk about these things much here because people, I don't know whether they're not ready for it or they don't want to consider it. But it's documented at a level that's not really deniable, to include the moving of stones. So when you start talking about, you know, people are thinking, oh, come on, you're looking through the top of a pyramid. Well, from what I have seen as possible and from what has been documented in relatively recent times, 200 tons of stone can be levitated with very few people, creating sound. And I've even heard accounts where it basically becomes weightless and one individual can basically just push this massive weight.
Yeah, and guide it. Absolutely.
And this is really the power of what we're talking about.
In the beginning was the word. What can the word do? These are demonstrations today of what the word can do, even today by certain people.
There it is. It's John 1, right? King James Version of the Bible. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him, nothing was made. But it goes on shortly after that to say things like, wait for it, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not, I think it says, something like that. But now think about that King James opening verses of the book of John compared to what we've been talking about. And you begin to see that the surface level of these narratives is a very low level of comprehension, what's actually there. And what's interesting also, we're getting ready to wrap up hour one here, Randy, but the book of John that opens so famously in that way, saying such an important thing as it opens, is the one book that is not considered synoptic. Synoptic means basically to see with one eye. So the other three gospels are considered to be seeing with one eye, or synoptic.
And not seeing duality, you know?
Right, yeah. It relates to the pineal gland too, doesn't it? To spiritual vision, one eye.
Yep, single vision, undivided and not in any conflict.
Well, let's make this a break point. Why don't you tell folks one more time where they can find you and your work, and we're going to take a short break and prep up for hour two, Randy.
Okay. So they can see my website, universalsong.net, and my email, universalsong@yahoo.com. And I look forward to getting correspondences. I do my best to get back because I get so many in a day. It can be overwhelming. But I do that. And you can order tuning forks and other products and things that I create, but generally by contacting me rather than clicking on certain buttons and then automatically ordering, because everything's made up to order as I get them. It's a little slower, but a personal attention is given. And then I do consulting for how to use tuning forks and things that people get from me. I do that as well.
All right, Jason, you want to add anything in before I wrap up hour one?
Well, there's something I'd really like to ask about that maybe we could open up hour two with. And that's the frequencies and all that that the ancient peoples would have used. They obviously didn't have convenient technology like today. So what was their basis of comparison to know that 440 hertz is 440 hertz and that kind of thing?
All right. We're going to open up an hour or two with that idea. Okay, Randy?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so we're going to cut hour one right now. As everybody knows, hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full 2 hour or 2 hour plus episode. Members get access to all the forums. They can create their own forums. They get access to all the comments and the 2 hour film called Shoot the Moon that covers all my telescopic work. It has 10 awards in the world now. It's actually quite popular right now because of the double sun phenomena that may turn out to be associated with the new era we're moving into. But with that, I hope to see everybody logged in as a member for hour two. That would be fantastic. And I do hope to see you there. We're going to prep up. We'll be back shortly. And I'd like to wish everybody a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.